Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 216, featuring Jérôme Dangean, better known as Jed. I have known Jed for a long, long time. He is the head of CG at Blur Studio, and we talk a little bit about his history and how he got there. But more importantly, what we spend most of our time talking about is the new animated series called Love, Death, and Robots, because Jed was the series VFX supervisor on it. If you want to know more about what Love, Death, and Robots is, it is an animated anthology that is done. So it's 18 shorts, and it is definitely adult-oriented. It is not for kids, for sure. And it's a brainchild of Tim Miller and David Fincher. And Tim Miller has actually been thinking about doing something like this for a very long time. And if you want proof of that, he talks about it briefly in episode 39 that I did with him back in September 2015. So he has been thinking about this for a really long time. This Love, Death, and Robots is just absolutely spectacular. It is such a wide variety of styles and stories that are going on. Reminiscence of the days of liquid television or things like that. But really, this is a whole new ballgame in terms of that content. All these shorts are different lengths as well, which is also very interesting. And I just think it's just really, really, really great stuff. So hopefully, you guys should go check out that series for sure. But Jed talks about a lot of the amazing work that went into this, some of the projects that they worked on, Blur themselves, but he also had to oversee projects that were done by other studios. In fact, studios did Blur traditionally competes against or competes with. So companies like Unit Image and Platige and Axis Animation, Atomic Fiction, Digic, Blow Studios. It's just a really long list of stuff. And they also got some incredible directors to participate in this. So some of them are, you know, Tim directed one of them, but there's also an amazing, amazing, amazing short by Alberto Mieglo, but that you totally have to check out as well. I mean, I think it's called The Witness, but really, really fabulous work. So I am really, really happy about this podcast and really happy I was able to talk to Jed about it. I think you guys will enjoy it and hear more about how that came about and what it was like to work on a show like this. And hopefully in the near future, I'm going to be able to get Tim to come back on the podcast and give us his point of view on this, because now that he's sort of gone through it, it'd be interesting to hear his story since that episode I did back in September 2015. So hopefully you guys will get that at some point. It's just really hard to get Tim's schedule and his time available right now. So that's all I got. All right. Enjoy this amazing podcast with Jed from Blur Studio talking about love, death, and robots. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
No, it's amazing. I used to be a DJ for a radio way back when.
What? This is what I love about this podcast. But, I mean, you get to hear
we did not have all this technology that you guys have on this this little studio.
Where was this?
This was in Vienne, France. Uh-huh. That was like the late 80s.
Okay. You were a DJ, huh?
I was a radio DJ. So, I mean, I had like a little show once a week, an hour.
What was your show about?
It was about, we just like playing music and just talking about, you know, just talk about music and whatever.
Nice.
But yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny to see a microphone again.
It's been a while, I guess.
I know, yeah.
So what got you into visual effects?
Oh, man. Chance a little bit.
Okay.
Because that was absolutely not what I started out to do.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school. I went to college to study American literature.
And, really? In France?
In France, yeah. So, I mean, there's like an English program.
Sure.
For, that usually produces English teachers mm-hmm. in France. I got into this because, I mean, I was really interested in music at the time. And And I was reading a lot of American magazines, which, you know, developed my skills in English or my interest. And then I was like, well, at least this I can do without working too hard. So, so I did that. I actually graduated, in American and English literature.
Okay.
And then once I was at the end of it, I was like, I don't really want to be an English teacher. I was really into music at the time. So I kind of stopped, college after I graduated.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't pursue the rest of what would have been needed to become an English teacher.
Right.
And then I was doing a lot of music at the time, and my girlfriend at the time had bought a computer, which was my first, first exposure to a computer. Uh-huh. And the band needed, always needed like flyers and like little things right. to just kind of advertise, yep. around.
Exactly.
And so, I was the one in the band with a computer. So by default, I had to install Photoshop and, just like really basic stuff at the time. And just kind of like really developed a liking for it.
Interesting. And
then when my rock star dreams, just once I realized that was not going to happen, then that's when I was like, well, maybe I should try to pursue this thing. At the time, I mean, it was, you could still kind of, I mean, I guess you still can, but
right.
I was still able to like, I bought some books about computer graphics and then just kind of like taught myself like some basic stuff at the time. Uh-huh. A friend of mine just around that time was starting a company doing graphic design.
Okay.
And asked me to join him and see if we could kind of do something together.
Yeah.
And so I worked there for like about 3 years.
Right.
Doing absolutely anything. Websites, we were doing like flyers for corporate stuff. And then there was one of his clients was doing architecture.
Yeah.
And my friend was actually coming from architecture, and then so we kind of got into 3ds Max at the time, which was the first version, mm-hmm. Just to kind of do some basic archviz, mm-hmm. and I really liked it. That was the thing that I liked much more than even
the 2D
printing. Yeah. Like print was my nemesis. I hated it so much.
The color and trying to
I could never, resolution. You never know right. how it's going to come out. Like, especially when like a client like asked for like 3,000 copies of something and it doesn't come out the way you wanted.
Yeah.
So 3D was kind of, I liked it.
Yep.
And then, so that was in Lyon, France, up until maybe 2000. And then 2000, it was time to kind of do something else. And then I got a job at a video game company in France, in Paris.
Yeah.
So I moved to Paris, worked there for about a couple of years in their cinematic department.
Okay.
So
can you say which company it was? Or?
The company was called Creo.
Oh, yeah.
They were doing a lot of games they were doing some really cool games at the time.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing a lot of stuff that was kind of, you remember like Myst?
Yeah.
And exactly. Was that Riven the other day?
Yeah.
A lot of like pre-rendered,
yep.
bubbles, we were calling them at the time. So you would just kind of pick like a place in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would render a 360 thing. And then as a player, you could just kind of like look around and it was right. like some clickable areas. And they were doing a lot of games with like museums. So for example, there was a game about Versailles, the castle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had to like rebuild the entire Versailles castle in 3D. And then there was like some sort of intrigue happening in there. But then they were saying.
So it was like Myst, but inside of Versailles kind of?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there was like a bit of a game aspect to it. You got to, right. Like some sort of like intrigue, somebody like killed,
right.
a courtesan or something in the, during Louis XIV,
right.
reign. And then, but it was kind of cool because like you had to remodel like some pretty complicated stuff.
Yeah.
But then the company was not doing really good after a couple of years. Like they were having some like money problems and, mm-hmm. And then I had spent a couple of years in the US mm-hmm. while I was finishing college mm-hmm. and I really liked it. And I was kind of wanting to come back. Yeah. And at the time, you know, I knew the Paris was not really for me. Like I wasn't born and I wasn't raised there. So
you're more of a Lyon guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. The food's better in here.
And, excellent food. What's the name of the very famous restaurant in Lyon? That like
Paul Bocuse.
Yeah, Paul Bocuse. Mm-hmm. 3-4 months in advance to make a reservation.
Oh yeah, at least yeah. And there's a lot of them like in the area. But I mean, there's really good food in Paris too. But,
it is.
But the weather was not sitting well with me. Right. Paris was just too rainy and too gray. And so I started looking around, like around the US or, you know, even Canada, like where I could just kind of move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And then, well, I got, I had an offer, somewhere, I think it was Ubisoft. And then right before I was ready to say yes, I was like, you know, I need to try. There's like two companies that at the time I was really like looking up to. Mm-hmm. It was Blizzard and Blur.
Right.
And
yep, that makes sense.
And I was like, well, so I sent an email to like both companies saying, hey,
okay,
would you be interested? And Tim Miller replied. And
interesting.
And they flew me here. In 2002, and then I finally moved for good in 2003. I'm still here.
So you've been at Blur how long now? We were talking about like 16 years.
Yeah, 16 years. Wow. In January 2003.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, it's obviously you've been happy here.
Yeah. No, very much.
And Blur has done some amazing work over the last 16 years. But things have gotten very interesting now at Blur, obviously, with Tim taking on much more of a sort of overall director perspective, right? So when that happened, I'm assuming that a lot of people, including yourself, had to change roles at Blur, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's been kind of what has always made Blur so interesting. And I mean, for me, I started as just a character modeler early on,
right.
And then moved up the ladder just as the need arose.
Right.
When Tim got the Deadpool gig, that's when we kind of had to like restructure the studio a little bit.
Right.
Jennifer Miller kind of had to like, you know, be much more involved on the 3D side.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave Wilson, at the time, who was one of the directors, just became the creative director. And then I became the head of CG.
Right.
Which, you know, can mean a lot of different things, but, it basically meant just, I'd been supervising projects for, you know, almost 15 years at the time. But it's more about, you know, making sure that we keep mentoring the supervisors and we have, you know, that they get some help because like there's constantly a lot of new people.
Right.
And we're constantly looking for new leaders.
Yeah.
But we also need to, you know, keep the culture of what makes Blur Blur. And,
right.
And so I think it was important for them to have somebody who's been here for a long time to, you know, to just kind of carry the torch a little bit.
Right. Now, speaking specifically of the culture of Blur, right? I mean, this is something that I think Tim, when you meet Tim, and he's been on the podcast a couple of times, and he's a very charismatic person, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a passion for graphic novels. He's got a passion for content that's not necessarily for kids, right? That's a little bit more edgy.
Absolutely.
And I think that's he proved that when he went on to do Deadpool. And this project that you guys did, you know, the Love, Death, and Robot, very much seems like this is a symbolic blurness to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, ever since I've started, that's always been, you know, I mean, we've never really been into what's, you know, for the past 15 years has been kind of the mainstream aspect of 3D with mm-hmm. talking animals and big eyes and, like, you know, the very stylized kind sure. of family style 3D of animation. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's just... Nope.
And you guys do a little bit of that. You guys did it with the goldfish stuff, yeah, you know?
Yeah, and it's super fun to do. Right. And I think we've always wanted to be able to do it mm-hmm. because we like it. And there's always, like, great styles there. But at the same time, I think we've always wanted to show that there's more to animation, and animation can be more than just family stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's so much that you can explore with that medium in terms of storytelling, and that, you know, we've always felt like has not been done, you know, just nobody, either nobody was really interested in it or,
sure.
I think, you know, there's a level of technology that's been kind of needed also over the years to be okay. able to, like, tell the kind of stories
to pull off the things you want
to
do.
Yeah. I think to be able to tell the stories that we wanted to tell in Love, Death and Robots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're there now. I think you see it with, like, some of the movies that are in the theaters, you know, even right. now. Like, I think I don't know if you saw Ready Player One this year.
I did.
And I thought it was really interesting how, like, I don't know how this movie would have been received like 10 years ago. Cause there's I think now people are ready to just follow a movie where the main characters is not necessarily just a live action actor, but,
right.
But it looks like a human, but not, you know, and I think, like, right. people have been kind of following video games also. And it's kind of, you know,
yeah.
broadened perspectives and the way people look at stories.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's, there's something interesting about it. So we should mention a little bit what Love, Death and Robots is. So people have an understanding. So, this is an anthology
right.
of some kind, right? And it's 18 shorts.
Yeah, so it's an anthology of 18 short stories
yep.
That is on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, so it's about 3 hours of content overall. It's 18 stories that range from between 5 minutes to 15 is the maximum we have.
Okay.
As big of a variety of styles as we could get
well,
for
right.
for this, yeah. Because that's, you know, you were mentioning that Blur does also, like, goldfish commercials, which right. is, you know, and that's always been something I think Blur has always been kind of associated with, like, a little bit of, like, you know, the game cinematic that are sort of realistic, but not completely, but
yeah, like the Elder Scrolls stuff you guys did,
right.
That's very different from the goldfish.
Yeah, it is. Yep. But we've always really liked to be able to do it all. And,
right.
And so we wanted, you know, this anthology to kind of reflect that and right. just show as many styles of animation, because the thing is, this is, I think, something that's really important for people to know is that Love, Death and Robots is rated mature.
Right.
And it's because it's adult stories.
Right.
So there's a little, you know, that doesn't mean that there's necessarily, like, nudity and cursing and violence in each one of them. But I think these are stories that you only really appreciate once, you know, you've lived a little bit.
Right.
And you're like, you know, I think, so the medium of, you know, through which it comes, you know, has been associated with family fare, you know, for the past 20 years.
But I think that's the thing that's been great about Tim, and hopefully I can get, I know Tim's schedule's a little crazy, but he promised me that he's going to come back onto the podcast mm-hmm. and talk from his point of view. But nonetheless, since, I mean, Tim succeeded when Deadpool came out, because no one said you could ever do an R-rated superhero film, and right. they proved them wrong, mm-hmm. right? And I think this is what opened the doors for him to do that.
Absolutely.
But I also think something also very important is that this is not something that's made for television. This is made for Netflix.
Right.
And Netflix has a lot more leeway in terms of what it's able to do, right? it can do that. And because you can make the choice to watch it or not watch it. It's not like you stumble on it when you're clicking through the TV.
Right.
So by doing so, it's a choice. Then you like, that you acknowledge the fact that you want to watch this thing, which I think a lot of people do. And so on-demand video content like that is fabulous, I think, you know?
No, it's fabulous. And also to Netflix credit, like, I think it's fabulous that they were, that they saw what this could be and were like, okay, well, let's do it. I was not completely sure what the end result would be.
Okay.
But I think everybody's really excited about what, you know, like the different versions of what that could be. And we're like, all right, let's try it.
Yeah.
And I think we're all very proud of the result.
Well, you mentioned obviously that there was different styles that you can do within Blur, but you also reached out to a lot of other companies, right? So it's not
right.
So you guys did three, I believe, of the shorts, right? And so a lot of other companies did other shorts as well. And what I find fascinating is that you guys reached out to companies that you guys traditionally compete against.
And on a personal level, I mean, that's been what was the most exhilarating about the whole experience.
Right.
Because all the companies that were traditionally our competitors, all kind of agreed to just be part of this and were very excited to be part of a bigger community of storytellers in that animation media. And I think everybody was really excited to be on board with that, because I think everybody saw that this was going to be different. This was, different from, because we compete for the same kind of projects. We all compete for, like, game cinematics and a little bit of visual effects.
Right.
But it was so exciting to be able to finally tell a story where we don't have to sell anything,
this is not about like a video game that you want to get more buyers. This is about just doing something completely creative, right?
Right. And so all those companies, and it was great to work with all the companies that we usually compete against, but I mean, we all have like an enormous respect for each other. I mean, obviously a company like Digic and Unit and Axis and Platige, I mean, just to name like a few, we compete against them, but we're so excited whenever they release anything because we all want to see it. We all want to.
I'm sure they do the same when you do something.
I'm sure. Yeah. And so it was, it was great to find a project where we can all like talk about how to make something bigger and better. And I think everybody was also very excited about the level of like creative freedom that we wanted. The real draw for us was not, because if Blur had done 18 stories, there would have been a little bit of, there would have been different styles, but not to the level of what we have now, where, Unit is bringing their own sensibility. And so does Digic. And so all those companies around the world, like, really brought what makes them great usually, cause like when I look at like a Digic piece, I'm amazed because this is not something we could do.
Right.
And same with Unit. And we wanted that, we wanted something that is not just what Blur can do, but what the entire, what the entire world can.
So what was your role on this? Because obviously you sort of were like, you weren't just for Blur, you were kind of for the whole project in a sense, right?
Yeah. So I was the visual effects supervisor for the show.
For the whole show.
Yeah.
So you would overlook other people's work as well.
Right. And so I was kind of like the client side supervisor on the Blur side. So yeah, I was a little bit of, so we had like a little room set up separately at Blur where we would, we would just look at the work on all 18 shorts.
Sure.
And try to direct traffic and help and as much as we could.
Right.
So it was a great opportunity to just kind of talk with all those, all those other companies, just kind of exchange like great, learn a little bit about how they do stuff, but mostly to just like exchange, just different ways to tell stories. And it's been fantastic.
Yeah. Well, since we have a little bit of freedom to talk a little bit more about some of these specific projects, let's go ahead and do that. So tell me some of your favorite ones and like some of the ideas or like things that were unique, the stories that really sort of are things that people should look for.
You know, I mean, I know this is going to sound like a little corny, but there's, you know, it. I didn't think starting the project that we would look at it at the end at all 18 stories and be like, well, there's no story that I don't like.
Sure.
I think it's been fascinating to, I mean, I have loved working on the stories that, you know, our main competitors did, because right. It was great to work with Digic. It was great to work with Unit and Axis right. and Platige, because I'm familiar with their work, and it was great to just kind of see a project coming from them just kind of build itself from the ground up.
Right.
But I've been also very fascinated to see, because the show is not just in 3D. We also have like 2D stories in 2D animation. And we have one live action short that was directed by Tim also.
Oh, interesting.
And so it was fascinating for me too, because I'm not really familiar with the process of 2D animation. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a great, you know, it's been a great experience to just see how Passion Pictures like works on their works on their projects. Or there was an animation house in Korea called Red Dog Culture House that did one short that I really love also called Good Hunting.
Uh-huh.
Seeing them just kind of work on the story and it's been there's another studio in Paris called Studio La Cachette that did and as far as I could tell before that they were doing a lot of like shows for kids.
Right.
And they were really excited about doing this one. And now this one is, you know, definitely not for kids. And so it's been really good to just kind of, it's been really good to see how people work like a little differently. One of my personal favorites also, and I'm sure this one will resonate with a lot of people, that story called The Witness that was directed by Alberto Miago.
Yeah. That's an amazing one.
This one is incredible.
I think when I saw it like with Lon, and I was like, I just don't understand how that was possible. Like and then of course when we find out, you know, he's, you know, he was also kind of involved in the early days of Spider-Verse work, right? So you're like, you can see, and I've known Alberto. I've met him at THU. He's an incredible person, but it is awesome, beautiful.
Yeah, and
the style is incredible.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you know, your reaction when you were a little, you know, speechless when you were trying to describe it.
Yeah,
I think has been like everybody's reaction as we saw this thing just kind of take shape. Mm-hmm. The story was really good to begin with, but to see it kind of take shape, it's so unique in the way he works and
yes,
and how, I mean, the story was great. And then once he started to do the storyboards, we were like, oh my God, how, I mean, just the storyboards itself, like, I wish we could just kind of like, you know, if there's one day, one behind the scene that we can do and we can show just the story reel of that short, like you just watch it and you're like completely mesmerized. Like, and then all the animation that is done on it, just the mixed medium but it's so beautiful.
It's like his painting. So, it's like because he has he's a painter. He's traditionally known for his amazing paintings, but it's basically like his paintings come to life, right? In a lot of ways.
Yeah, and he's a painter, but you can see he's also like a photographer, and I mean he's got such an understanding of not only
visual
painting,
language,
but lens effects and all that. I mean, you watch it, and it's funny because like there's been some points where he showed us like some rough. You know, some rough proof of concept at the beginning, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Oh, I don't know how that's gonna work." This mix of the 3D character that looks very CG on top of those paintings,
right?
But once he's done all these passes of just polish, you're like, "Oh my God, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen."
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this one was fascinating.
But I think what's also fascinating is that, you know, you were talking about all these other companies you work with, which is great, but you were trying to, like, he basically seems to have just, like, formed a company out of midair,
right.
and it just, dissolved.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a hit and run kind of thing. I mean, he had to he had to be in Madrid for during the production, so he just went to Madrid and then just assembled. I mean, an absolutely incredible crew of people,
right?
Because for them to be able to, I mean, for them to be able to like pull out this short that's about almost 10 minutes long.
Yep.
And to pull out this short without the infrastructure of like a bigger, you know, a bigger studio, like,
sure,
you know, like Blur or, is absolutely incredible. Cause that was a lot of rendering and a lot of costumes and a lot of, but you know, everything works so well, so well animated. And so, yeah, I think this one is going to resonate for a lot of people because it's so unique looking. You know?
I think so. But there, I mean, we shouldn't really dismiss some of the other work, obviously, that's been done. I think the content, I think it's very liberating for companies like, you know, even like Blur or Unit or Digic or Axis and all those guys to be able to do something that's not, you guys do edgy work. Mm-hmm. Blur does for sure, and so do all the other companies, right? Especially if you're doing cinematics for some very, you know, games that are sometimes for mature content. Right. But being able to have complete freedom, where it's like what you're doing is your own thing,
right,
is kind of cool. It's kind of cool. What were some of the companies that, I mean, obviously, you know, mentioned Unit. We work with Unit as well because they're a big V-Ray house, but they've always done some very interesting animation work as well, right? And so they're very cinematic.
Yeah, and I really like working with Unit because when we talked to them at the beginning and we showed them the story, like we almost, I mean, we've talked with them about it and they said it's not true, but it was kind of the story Beyond the Killer Rift is a sci-fi story, but it's but it's very, it's a bit more of a psychological thriller. And
yes.
Unit has been, I mean, you know, they've been amazing at, you know, blowing stuff up and then doing yep. this like big, epic, cinematics. And when we offered them the story, it kind of felt like they were like, you know, it's almost like, don't you have like another one with mech warriors like fighting instead? Yeah. But the way they've tackled it, which is because it's a little different. There's a lot of dialogues mm-hmm. and there's a lot of acting, which for them I think was, you know, was more than what they've done before. Mm-hmm. But I've been absolutely amazed by how they tackled it.
Yeah.
They were like, all right, well then, okay, then it's on. Well, let's do it. We're gonna get better at that. The character work they've done on it is just amazing.
Right.
And the story is really cool too.
Yeah.
So it's been great to just see them. Like they remind me of Blur. Like, you know, a little while ago.
I can see
just,
that.
Just how they're just so, you know, like they have the same thing that we had when like 15 years ago when I started. Where it's like, well, we're gonna do it and we're gonna do it better than anybody else. And
right.
And they're so passionate, and you can tell they will stop at nothing to just deliver the best level quality.
Yeah,
I mean, it's true of every company, but you know, when you look at the story that Digic did, The Secret War,
okay,
it's unmistakably Digic. You know, it's like the quintessential Digic cinematic. It's epic. They can do shots that nobody else can do,
right?
And it's beautiful, and it's, but you know, it's got this grit, and then it's so I think for them it wasn't as much of a stretch as maybe a Killer Rift was for Unit.
Yeah,
but you know, I think both of them are just so incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad, you know, to have been a part of the making of those shorts.
The other one that I thought was funny is you had these two directors from Spain.
Mm-hmm. Headless.
Those are interesting shorts that they did, right?
Yeah. And they've done three. They've done three. Yeah, they've done three shorts. They've specialized in comedy, even though they could do whatever they want. These guys are just so talented but so funny.
Right.
They took three of the shorter shorts, three of the shorter stories. And they've, you know, they've worked with two different companies, one in Denmark called Sun Creature that does 2D animation. And then they've worked with another small company in Spain called Blow, and they did two 3D pieces. And
then the one 2D piece in Denmark.
In Denmark, yeah. So they did three total. But I mean, it's been, I mean, on a personal level, it's been absolutely fascinating also working with so many like talented directors from around the world, like, and just see how, you know, to work beyond just, you know, the directors at Blur, because that's usually who I...
Well, how many directors did you guys have on this? Must have been several.
Yeah, there's, I believe there's like 20 directors worked on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Unit has four directors.
Okay.
But then Headless, you know, Victoria and Alfredo directed two, and then, you know, around the world, we tried to, like for all the studios that had in-house directors, we were really happy to work
let them direct
with them.
Yep.
And then the ones that weren't completely, you know, staffed with like an in-house directors, then we paired them up with directors that we knew here.
Right.
And it worked well too.
Awesome. Awesome. But I think that the idea of working with directors from around the world and doing such different content is kind of an interesting role for you, right? Because you were so the Blur is traditionally, you've got outside directors, but they're usually directors that you've worked with before, right?
Right.
And so suddenly you are working on a project where you have 20 different directors, and most of which you've never worked with before.
Yeah. But you know, for the most part, they work well,
right?
And it's been really inspiring. I mean, I think it really opened up, you know, I mean, not just me, but like all the people at Blur to just work with so many different visions and different, but I think, you know, just Tim picking all the stories and all.
Yeah, how did that work? Where did those stories come from?
All the stories came from, you know, I mean, you know how Tim is an avid reader. He just, that's all he does when he's not working, which is, you know, a lot of time. But he's been wanting to, these were all stories that he's read or that, you know, that resonated. And he's picked them all because they were the kind of stories that he wanted to tell.
Right.
And then he's been very, very involved in the script, in the creation of the script, like the adaptation.
Right.
And then
after Fincher was involved too, obviously, right?
As another executive producer. And so that was kind of the anchor, you know, for all the different studios and directors after that, you know.
Right,
like the story was picked.
Right. So here's the story. Would you like to do this story? Right.
There's we only had like two original stories that were written. Like Alberto wrote his own story for The Witness, and then Vitaly Shushko, who did the Blind Spot in Russia, also wrote
his own story.
Yep.
Well, that's really, really cool. I think the idea of doing this must have been amazing. How long did you guys work on this? I mean, when did it start where it's like, okay, we got a green light to do this? Because I know that Tim has been talking about doing something like this for 20 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's been on and off like for the past 20 years. I think the interest has not been, you know, in terms of like, you know, the creative control and in terms of timing, just after, you know, once Deadpool came out and it showed that, you know, there is an audience for, you know, rated R. It's not exactly animation for Deadpool, but, you know, it's kind of a, you know, comic book, like for rated, for mature audiences. I think it just kind of showed, you know, people in town that this, you know, there might be an audience for that. I think Netflix was the perfect medium for it because they are looking for content and they're not afraid to just try new things.
Yeah.
They just said they gave us the green light about 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And so it took a while to kind of get off the ground because because we've never done anything like this. And it's right. obviously a, I mean, it's a pretty monumental task in yeah. terms of, I mean, in terms of like not only gathering the stories, but like, you know, acquiring all the rights to the stories and right. then just kind of working with all the companies. And it's, I mean, it is a lot of things to coordinate. So it took a while to actually get into production. Mm-hmm. But once it was in production, then it took about, you know, around a year and a half.
Right.
So if, you know, if there is a season two, like we're hoping that we can do the second one faster than the 2.5 years that it took from the first one. People are going
to
forget about
it. Well, you guys know about how to do it, right? So you guys had to learn. I mean, this is a process that everyone had to learn. Ditchick had to learn how to work with you guys. You guys had to learn how to work with multiple other people. And it takes up a lot of time. And you guys, I'm sure you figured out some of the pitfalls that are involved.
Right.
But I think that, you know, thinking about it, I was like, Netflix is the perfect medium for this type of thing, right? Because it's...
I think so, yeah.
It's you can watch it at your own leisure. You can look at it, you know, you can pick which short you want to watch. You mm-hmm. don't have to watch it in an order, right?
Right, yeah.
So that also is modern, mm-hmm. you know, contemporary thing. There also, it's not... Because it's not episodic TV... every short can be a different length, you know, and then right. that's also a big freedom. So there's so much.
And they're
creative.
Short.
They are.
And they're short too. You know, I was talking with somebody the other day who was saying that, you know, all those streaming platforms are looking for content that's short enough for, you know, people in their Uber or people in their, you know, like people who yeah. are just people that don't have like a full hour to dedicate to. Because, you know, I love short stories too, but like, you know, when you look at Black Mirror or the one on or the Electric Dreams on mm-hmm. On Amazon, they're all about an hour, and it's shorter than a full movie, but it's still a big investment in terms right. of time, you know, and they're kind of all an hour, and some episodes you wish they were a little longer and a little, you know, more developed, and there's some that you wish were a little shorter because, you know.
Right.
But we didn't have that problem because we were like, well, you know, if it's 5 minutes, then let it be 5 minutes. And right. And if it's 15, then we'll take the time. We didn't really want to do anything longer than 15 because then it becomes something else.
Sure.
And we thought the format of, you know, I think the what we were trying to hit at the beginning was like 3 minutes, 7 minutes, and 11. I think there's like a rule somewhere. Like, I mean, right. it's kind of a guideline. We went a little longer on some of them, but then it becomes almost like a feature film. Like when I look at some of those Black Mirror episodes, and they're great, but after 1 hour. One, like, I'm like, okay, I can't, I need to rest my brain.
I mean, it's full. This is highly, highly polished, you know, computer animation, right?
Right.
Highly good looking stuff. So making an hour long episode would be very expensive.
Yes, it would be.
And you guys are still experimenting in this kind of stuff.
But at the same time, you know, when you look at the entirety of the thing, like it's 3 hours, we could have done 1 hour episode of very expensive episodes, but I think there's something about having 18 of them, you know, and wish we could have done like 20 or 25.
I think that's the thing that you were able to prove, like how all the different styles of animation that can be done, right?
Right.
It kind of, you know, we're talking about like people don't know if this is something that people want to do, but the fact is, in the comic book world, like, you know, I mentioned it before, but in the comic book world, there is, you go to a renowned comic book shop, you do have a bunch of Spider-Man and Superman and whatever, but you also have these graphic novels that are not appropriate for kids, right? And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, we're not talking about pornography, we're talking about subject matters that is difficult and challenging to talk about, right? And mature subjects that are like, you know, that's for kids are not necessarily doing it. And I think that's exactly the feeling I got when I was watching these shorts. It's like, this is, You know, there's violence involved. There's mm-hmm. emotional impact. You know, the one that you mentioned that UNIT did, I saw that one and I was like, oh, this is a deep psychological thing, right? I mean, Alien as a movie is a fantastic movie, but it's not appropriate for kids, you know?
Exactly. And there's so many of them because, yep. And I think, you know, a lot of people like at the beginning when we kind of talked about it, I think when you say adult animation for adult, I think people imagine animation for young adults, you know, and it's going to be a lot of gratuitous nudity right. and a lot of violence. And I think we really wanted to, you know, I mean, we didn't want anything to be gratuitous.
Right.
And so, you know, there is some nudity, there is some violence, yep. but it's in the same way that there is, you know, that in an R-rated movie,
yep.
The story is still driving what's happening. And if it's appropriate for the story, then we're not afraid to go there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if the story doesn't require it, then we're not going to be, you know.
Yeah. I think it's really, really great that you guys did that. And I applaud it. When I was a young adult, let's just put it that mm-hmm. way, since you brought it up, you know, I was fascinated by heavy metal. I thought it was great. I didn't see it when it came out. I was too young when it came out, I think. But I, you know, it wasn't that long after that right. I saw it. And I was going, what? I didn't know that animation could do right. this, you know? So there's obviously a lot of influence in that world that Tim remembers, obviously, because he's from that generation as well. But there's also the one thing that became really cool to me was Liquid Television. Do you remember uh-huh. Liquid Television? Uh-huh. And when I watched, and Liquid Television is edgy in right. some way, but not, you guys are going a little step beyond than what that could do, which right. is even better to me. But I do, when I saw these shorts and I'm looking at them, I'm like, it's brought me back to that moment where like my eyes were open. I'm seeing something I've never seen before, you know, right. watching like the Aeon Flux shorts. Remember uh-huh. those?
Oh yeah.
And I was like, and it's so inspirational as candy, and like, and then the subject is grittier, so you're not just watching normal cartoons, right. you know. And that's okay to watch normal cartoons, like you said, the goldfish stuff is great. But suddenly, like, it's so great to see something so interesting and different, and I loved it, and it just brought back all those memories of right. inspiration. And I think that's what we need. We need a little bit of a means of visually telling a story that's a little bit grittier, right? Because live action can go so far, but with animation, you can get to the surreal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I think you're right, and I'm glad you're receiving it like this.
Right.
I've often thought, you know, as we were like seeing this whole series develop, it's almost like, I feel so privileged to have been part of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wish I could have the fresh eyes to just watch the whole show like this, you know, for the first time.
I will be your eyes. I can tell you. Because that you did. I know what you mean. It's very hard sometimes, uh-huh. you know. I've worked on some shows and it's like, I don't know if it's any good or not, because I've seen that shot so many times. All right. I'm seeing is like shot number 2, 7, 5, 6. You know, uh-huh. like you don't. It was great to see it, you know.
Yeah, and I hope people love it right. as much as we do. I've done CG for a long time now. I mean, I've been mm-hmm. in this business for more than 20 years,
right.
and I remember, like, you know, what you're talking about, you know, Liquid Television, Aeon Flux. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, I mean, I grew up with heavy metal myself. Right. Like, I love that movie.
Yeah,
just because of what it. Like how different it was, you know. Like, I mean, when you watch it, obviously, like it's aged a little bit, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, and it might have been geared towards young adult a little more than we are.
Yeah, I mean, it was also during a time when, you know, the drug was happening.
It was such a different,
it was trippy.
Such a
I mean, it was
time.
Like, let's make something really trippy, man. Right. And that's exactly what they did. And right. it's not to dismiss it, but it was like just that's possible,
right?
You know,
yeah, and I hope, you know, we were able to like touch a little bit of that, you know, like yep. we wanted to do something that that just felt different.
Right.
But using the tools that we're so familiar with, you know, and and we wanted people to be able to, you know, have the same, you know, the same feeling. And I hope that some kids will, I mean, not too young kids, but, you know, some kids will like watch Love, Death and Robot and be inspired to just, you know, work on something like that, you know, 20 years from now.
And I think even, you know, the fact that you have digital humans in there, that's something that, you know, that's very hard to do. Mm-hmm. Still, we know that. They're still not exactly perfect, but they're really interesting to look at in this thing, you know. And Unit Image obviously has been trying to like really get into doing some interesting work there. And you guys as well. Mm-hmm. Digital humans are tough.
I mean, and I think everybody had to step up on that that front, because I think everybody realizes that if your main characters just take you out of the story, you got no story. Right. And so we've tried really, really hard, you know, on this one to do something that would at least, you know, it's not always perfect, and it's not always like a for real human, but at least we wanted something that doesn't take you out of the story, because we all think that the story is really cool.
Right.
And then, you know, so there's different levels of photoreal humans in the show. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at Lucky 13, the one that Sony did, mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people are going to think it's live action, that the short is just, I mean, what they can do with their human faces is just absolutely...
Sony did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucky 13, that was directed by Jerome Chen.
Okay.
It's a great... I mean, this one is absolutely incredible in terms of the visual, you know, quality of their faces. And they went for photoreal. I mean, Jerome was like, I just want photoreal.
I'm not gonna back down.
Not interested in the Uncanny Valley. I'm just gonna do it perfectly, or I'm not interested. And I think he did. Like, I mean, it is. I think a lot of people are gonna be confused by that one, just in terms of, is this a live action or is this
really awesome? Well, I think that's absolutely fascinating. But you know, obviously, since you were the overall VFX and you had to do this, what would you say was the thing that you tried to create? There must have been some underlying thing that made it feel consistent across all of the shorts. What was some of the things that you could think of that you tried to do to make that consistency?
Well, it's a bit of a fine line. I think we all knew what what all those companies can do, and that's why we picked them. You know, like all the we knew what that DJ can do, like incredible stories, and so. And on some levels, like much better than anything I could ever, you know, I could do myself. So I really wanted to kind of preserve that, and just, you know, we really wanted to focus on, is this telling the story the way we think Tim wants to tell the story?
Yeah.
I think my main role was, you know, Tim got really, really busy halfway through the show.
Yep.
Had to leave to direct his next movie. And so I think my role was really to just, you know, I mean, I've worked with Tim for 16 years now. Right. I think I have a pretty good understanding of like visually what he wants and what he's interested in. Mm-hmm. So my role was to just kind of make sure that it never kind of got below a certain bar. Mm-hmm. But also to really just make sure that these guys were having fun and were doing something that was theirs. I think, you know, I always try to look at whenever we receive something, I always try to look at it and be like, okay, this is not what I thought this was going to look like. but is it cool? And sometimes you're like, oh my God, this is super cool.
Right.
And then sometimes you're like, I don't know. And you kind of have to like kind of think about it. And sometimes, you know, it's not what I would have done, but you know, it's got its merit, and I certainly want to, you know, I don't want to give notes for notes, just for notes' sake and just kind of direct it myself. I mean, I'm not the director. I just want, you know, this story to just kind of be as great as it can be, and I think that's what I've tried to do.
Well, I think it's very important, right? It's you know, for, you know, having worked with many big visual effects supervisors and big directors in the past, I think that's the best thing that a good VFX supervisor can do, is anticipate what a director is going to feel.
Right.
Fix all the problems, obviously, that like, you know, oh, well, the foot's interpenetrating there, that like doing that, you know, weird thing like that.
Right.
But also like, you know what? I've worked with this director, you know, for example, I remember on some shot that I worked on at DD with Eric Barba, and mm-hmm. it was a Fincher. Oh, I think it was Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. Uh-huh. And there was some thing, and he looked into grade and goes, no, we got to change this grade. David can smell pink from the parking lot. So if there's any magenta in this, it's got to go. And so he knew that, right? And it's right. like, that wasn't, he knew the style because he'd worked on a bunch of Fincher stuff right. as well, right? So I think having that role as a VFX and saying, I am going to preemptively deliver something that I know based on the style that I've worked with him for 16 years that you right. can do that. Because that helps the director. He's too busy. He doesn't want to have to go through everything.
Yeah. Know? And sometimes like, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Girl with the Dragon Tattoo also, because like I, you know, we did the intro.
Yeah, remember? And, yeah, it's a beautiful intro.
Oh, thank you. And and I remember like showing, you know, we were like in reviews with Fincher, and he could see like sometimes he would come in and he'd be like, "You guys look stressed," and we're like, "Yeah, we're terrified."
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And he'd be like, "Oh, I'm only here as a fan. I just want to see like what you guys are doing."
That's cool.
And I thought this is, it's kind of a great way also to just kind of sum up like the relationship with those, right. with all those different companies. Like, right. I mean, for a lot of them, I was just there as a fan, you know, like I was yeah. just there to just kind of like look at the cool stuff they would send.
Isn't that week. Great to be able to do that though? Yeah.
I mean, I can't explain how fortunate I feel to be in this position, you know,
right.
It's been such an inspiring like couple of years to just, right. you know. I mean, not only to get to, because I got to work, you know, with Blur on like some really cool projects, but mm-hmm. at the same time, to be able to like, you know, expand a little bit and get to exchange like some of that stuff with the different companies has been fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think that, you know, obviously I've always been a fan of your work, and I've, you know, having gotten to know you guys and be able to, you know, just walk down there and, you know, ring the doorbell and say, mm-hmm. "Hey, Bae, Chris," you know, and she lets me in. Right. You know, I've already, and it's really kind of a really interesting thing to do and come by and see what you guys are doing. I love your work. I think your work is fantastic. I think the fact that this project happened at all is a testament to the persistence and patience of Tim. You know, he knew, like he said the same thing, right? With Deadpool, the idea was there, but waited for the right timing for it to happen. I think this is the same thing.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, and that's why, you know, 16 years later, I still can't go work anywhere else than
right.
Tim and Jennifer. There's just, I think it's a testament to like, you know, the persistence, but also there's like this fearless quality of like, yeah, we're gonna do it, and then before you know it, like the whole thing is signed, and then now we gotta figure out how we're gonna do it.
Right, right, right.
You know, which is, I mean, there's not a lot of people that would just kind of get into embark on something like that sure. without really completely realizing how complicated it's gonna be. Because, right. like, I mean, there's been a couple of times where we're like, holy, like, there's so much to do.
Right.
But you know, it forces you to just kind of like get out of your comfort zone and just kind of, you know, surround yourself with great people that know that stuff. And,
yeah.
and then that's how you learn and that's how you get better.
I think what will be great, you know, obviously I'm hoping you guys do a season two. I know obviously that's still in the decision process, but that you guys are going to open the minds of so many animation places that want to do so. I mean, I would love to see a Disney version that goes on Love, Death, and Robots.
Oh, know? Yeah.
Or it's people with real incredible different styles of animation producing stuff that's edgy, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I mean, obviously, you know, we hope like everything will go the way we think it will.
Mm-hmm.
And that it will find an audience beyond the animation, you know, industry, because that's really... You know, we want to touch people that don't really usually care about animation, and I'm not saying that it's not people that dislike animation. It's just people that never thought that they could, they could watch this kind of story
right.
with this particular medium.
Feeling that they would have to shoot something live action to do something like that.
Right. And I mean, you know, my girlfriend like is not in this industry at all. Mm-hmm. And it's great to like show her some of this short. And she's like, you know, like it's just so new to her. Like
right.
she was really, like she really gets into the story and forgets about the medium. And then once the story ends, she's like, wait, what did I just watch?
Yeah.
And I think that's really what I'm really interested in,
yes.
in seeing, you know, like the reaction of people to those shorts is my guilty pleasure these
right.
days.
I think there's a lot of interesting things that are happening in the last few years. Obviously things we mentioned Deadpool before, we're mentioning Love, Death and Robots, but even things like Last of Us 2, you know, like you mm-hmm. look at that game right. and you're like, this is very mature, very interesting right. narrative that's happening, and it's a video game. You know, right. It's completely different. So there's different ways of telling a story now
right.
that is more. And when I say mature, I mean it comes from a deeper part of our soul. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think yeah, and it's interesting. And I'm sure we only. I mean, I don't want to say we're the first step because we're definitely not the first step in animation and adult animation, but
right.
but we're, you know, one more step, and I'm curious to see what the next one will be.
Right.
Just the same way you look at, you know, you've read comic books and you've seen, yep. you know, the first Spider-Man and then what, it, you know, and then the first X-Men, and to just like how, you know, each new generation of like, of directors have pushed the even those superhero stories, like when
right.
you look at Wolverine, that's, you know, Deadpool,
yeah,
that like some of them get now really dark, you know, and it's no more, you know, yeah. we don't think of them as, you know, flashy costumes and they can just fly around and
yeah
and always win. Now there's like, you know, these are
suffering
and, yeah the yeah. suffering and, you know, the human condition, which is I think what we've tried to do with Love, Death and Robot, and
right.
And I'm sure some people will take that and push it much further. And
yes, people should be clear. This is not just gritty, hard stories. There is some very funny stories in there as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. yeah. Oh yeah. There's some. Oh yeah. No. This
dark humor in a lot of
right.
ways. Right.
Yeah. And right. And still, even if they're funny, they're still funny for adults.
Right.
There's no, you know, there's no Disney kind of comedy, and again,
right,
nothing wrong with it. It's just yeah. not what we've tried to do for the show,
right? But I think even Disney, you know, even Disney has shown, and it's not well known, but they've shown stuff that they've done. They're like, huh, like not expect, like the Tron animation they did right. was a little out of their mm-hmm. normal comfort zone, right. right? Or even, gosh, you know, you remember when you and our kids, when we saw the Black Hole as a movie, that mm-hmm. was a like that's a
Disney. I love that one.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Right.
But there are companies out there that have done that. They've experimented with these things, and I think that's really wonderful to do that. And having this in, there's several things that are new in this medium. One, right. it's, you know, short shorts and they're varying size. It's streaming.
Right.
It's CG and mm-hmm. it's photoreal CG in right. a lot of ways. And so I think that's an awesome medium for people to be able to digest that and see that wonderful thing. So it's awesome. So are you prepping, or like, you know, if season two happens, it's going to be big, or?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So season two, if it happens, and we should know very quickly, would be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to keep exploring new styles. So we'd love to kind of have like new partners to mm-hmm. work with, because it's always what makes this show so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to be able to do it faster next time. So we're, you know, we're already like preparing stories, like, you know, we're kind of trying to narrow it down so that by the time we know that it's going to happen, we want to be able to like say, okay, go.
Right.
It's ready. And we, you know, this time we've done our,
due diligence.
Right? Because it's a lot to figure out, you know.
Well, I'm sure there'd been a lot of learning to, you know, the first time you'd gone through this, it's never been done before, so you have to learn some of that.
Yeah, and it's complicated to just, you know, to figure out which story would be well done by which studio, you got to decide, well, is it better in 2D or in 3D? And then once it's in, once you've decided that, then it's like, which studio would be the best at that?
Right.
And then, you know, and then there's a little bit of, then you got to think about the budget and you got to think about like who can, you know, but so before you even kind of get started, then it's a lot of just moving pieces around.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's such a great, it's such a great adventure.
Well, cool. Well, listen, we've gone over an hour, which is perfect. So we're right there.
Oh, wow.
It goes fast. It goes fast. Is there any other thing you want to say before, as we wrap it up here, or because we, you know?
No, I just, well, thank you for having me first. Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I know. It's been always been a pleasure to listen to the podcast, but I know it's always wanted to come here with like something to talk about.
Well, now you have something awesome to talk about.
Yeah. No, I hope people watch it and I hope people like it. I hope there's a second season, just at least on a selfish level, just so I can get to work with all those great companies again, because it's been such a pleasure to just see what everybody around the world can come up with. It's been great.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Jeff, for doing this.
All right. Thanks, guys.